Welcome to the Automate and Grow podcast.
Very nice.
Yeah, I have to. I'll edit it.
Lucky sevens.
Lucky seven. Okay, we are here with Victor. How do I say your last name? Is it Belfour? Or?
Belfour is good.
Well, there we go. See, I almost say Vitor Belfour, who is like an MMA legend, but that's not what we're talking about today.
And I fought for many years.
Did you really?
I did, yeah.
Okay, so we're here on Automate and Grow.
Justified confusion.
Well, I see the resemblance, and now it's like we have a common thread between the two of you. So my name is Michael. I'm from Automate and Grow, and today with Victor Belfour from Conversica. And Conversica is doing some really interesting stuff with their platform around artificial intelligence. And a prior guest that we had, Brian Wright, was talking a little bit about Conversica. So I reached out to Victor to try and go right to the man and figure out what's going on with Conversica and why we should be interested in it. And I also want to learn a little bit about Victor, aside from I really want to know about like your MMA career or what, I don't know if it's MMA or some other martial art, but Victor, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
So, okay, you opened the door, so I got to understand. So I know we talked a little bit before and that you're originally from Crimea, and then you also went to school in Ukraine, correct?
That's right.
And you grew up in Siberia, of all places.
I did, of all places.
Wow. So born in Crimea, grew up in Siberia, went to school in Kiev in Ukraine.
That's right.
Was it the Ukraine in those days, or was it still?
It was still Soviet Union at the time, but yeah, Ukraine was a republic or whatnot. So it was an identifiable entity. So yeah.
Got it. And okay, so you opened the door that you fought. So I'm curious about that as a pugilistic MMA / martial arts / boxing fan. What's your history there?
I started when I was, you know, probably in my late 20s. So I started very late.
That's late.
I never competed professionally, but I got pretty serious and I fought for about 10 years after that. And did MMA and cages and
my goodness.
Yeah. I found it to be a phenomenal outlet. I'm a very nonviolent person and kind of fairly mild, but man, that provided the outlet that I needed somehow. Yeah.
That's amazing. And yeah. At what point did you, I guess, get involved in technology? And then at what point did you come over to the United States, for example?
Yeah, I came in 95 and immediately went into tech. My degree was in mechanical engineering.
Oh, okay.
So it's engineering, but it's not the right engineering.
It's engineering.
The only reason I got it was really because in those years in the Soviet Union there were no such things as marketing or economics or things of that sort. And so when I landed here, the one thing I knew for sure is that what I did not want to do is engineering. But tech was flourishing, and I joined a tech company in business development, and then a few years later, you know, all the cool kids were founding their own companies, and I wasn't any less cool than anybody else. So founded in 98, and you know, we bootstrapped the company to about 60 people, about $5 million in revenue. And
wow.
Which in those years, you know, people didn't have revenues. So,
sure.
So it's nice.
Those are the phantom days, right?
The phantom days, yeah. Yep. But, you know, pets.com or whatever, you know.
That's always funny. That's always the example
the
people
sock,
use, right?
The sock profit. But
so it's funny because I think I had a conversation, I think I mentioned with you, a friend of mine who's also a Silicon Valley veteran now and been through Y Combinator. And we just had a little bit of a joke that there's a lot of make-believe going on, but, you know, money validates ideas. So it's almost like funded experimentation a lot of times.
Less so now.
I mean, now it's real stuff, right? But in those days.
People at least have revenues, right? People have something other than other than, you know, nice domains. And at that time, you know, we were very unsophisticated. I was very unsophisticated as a founder. And so we never raised any capital. And because of that, we didn't survive the crash of you know, 2001. Although a lot of people who were much more sophisticated than I was didn't survive it either.
It was a rough time.
It was a rough time. And
some
so
of it
that's,
lived through it.
Well, and so much so that that's when I made a decision, a very conscious decision, never to found again, because I just thought that I was not sociopathic enough.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
I think as a founder, you have to be a little bit of a sociopath, right? And you have to, like, you know, do some very, very difficult things and then come home and sleep at night.
So you have to be able to marshal the resources regardless of what's going on, right?
Like, that's right.
Sometimes that's not nice for people.
There is that. There is also you just need to English is my second language. Yeah, exactly. Break it up into compartments, right? And I wasn't able to do that. And so when I had to, after I had to lay off 60 people, and it's like, you know, in those days, right now you lay somebody off and, you know, they're going to cross the street and find a job, you know.
Right.
In those times, that was not certain at all. And so after that, I joined. I started looking, and this is kind of the way I think. I started looking at really big macro trends. At the time, I felt that the big macro trend was enterprise mobility.
Okay.
And then I also was looking at, you know, inside of those macro trends, the simplest problems that exist, like the simplest things to wrap your mind around, right? Because I didn't want to have to explain to people in, you know, paragraphs upon paragraphs what exactly the company does and why does it do it. And so I joined sequentially two companies that were dealing with a lot of optimization, that's like processing optimization happens on handheld devices.
Interesting. So what were those two companies?
One was called Coding Technologies, which was a Swedish company, which got acquired by Dolby for about $400 million.
Wow,
and they did some, yeah, so we had a nice exit. And then another company, which was called Emuse, that got acquired by Flextronics.
Oh, I know Flextronics too.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for a couple of
does a lot or did a lot. I don't know about now, but for the carriers, right?
Well, precisely, and that's precisely what happened. So we had that mobility business, and the company was acquired for a couple of $100 million. In addition to all the products and business, where they also formed what then became Flextronics Software,
right?
And then became Aricent, and now is an independent and quite successful software development company.
Wow.
Yeah, and so then after that, I joined a company called, so continuing with the theme of telecommunications, mobility was already very deeply entrenched, but telecommunications certainly needed dramatic improvement. So I joined a company called RingCentral. RingCentral is
huge
by
now.
Far, yeah, but RingCentral is, you know, probably a $4 or $5 billion company now. Their stock just hit $50. Thank you, RingCentral. Thank you, RingCentral. And so I was their first head of business development.
Wow,
and
great.
And so saw the company grow from about 250 employees to about 1,800 employees, and you know, led business development for about 4 years. And so after that, so I switched to marketing automation, and so this is where this branch of my career starts, and started investing, and invested in a company called Influitive, which was founded by Mark Organ, who is the original founder of Eloqua.
Oh wow! Okay.
Just know, you know, growth and automation.
Right.
And have read the book. I'm sure there is some mention of some marketing automation in there.
Probably.
And
maybe
so,
a whole chapter.
Full chapter, exactly, right? So he was the original founder of Eloqua, and he started this company Influitive, which is an advocate mobilization platform, so to get customer advocacy And so got involved in this and ended up here at AI Assist.
Amazing. So I think this makes sense, which is you've been part of kind of different demand curves for technology enablers or trends, right, in various segments. So you're probably similar to me, where I was in the wireless space for a long time when that was in a growth business, right? And it sounds like, the marketing automation space, which still, I think, continues to grow quite, and the tools are just getting crazy, right? There's a lot of interesting stuff going on.
I just came from the Marketo annual sales kickoff. I mean, there is a lot going on in that space. It's fantastic.
Yeah, so now you're in a space, I think, that even though the sophistication has increased, there's some really interesting, this might be the first real world application, I think, of, you know, machine learning or artificial technology. And so it sounds like you've taken your experience as far as, you know, growth and startups and marketing automation, and now you're in a new world, it feels like. So
you know yes and no, right? So I'm continuing with the same pattern that I kind of chose for my career, right? So number one, mega trends, right? So AI is definitely a mega trend. There is no question about it, right? And then problems that are very easy to understand. And, you know, our particular applications of AI, you know, AI can be many things. AI is basically a statistical algorithm is what it is and can be applied to a million different things and is, right? So there's nothing particularly new about AI. You know, when you get your Netflix recommendations, that's AI,
right?
You know. When you get your Amazon, you know, when you see display ads displayed by Google, you know, that's AI. That's that's based on your behavior patterns. There's nothing, you know, there's many applications for AI and there is nothing particularly new about it. That said, I'm a big fan of doing sashimi knives rather than Swiss Army knives.
Okay.
And what we have here is a sashimi knife, right? So this is an assistant. She manifests as a human being.
Interesting.
She has a name. She has an email address, a phone number, a title. She has a personality. She has, you know, she has a dialable personality, dialable level of education. And what she does is she converts leads from raw to qualified.
Amazing.
So,
okay.
So that's so she doesn't chat with you. She's not Alexa. She's not Siri. She's not an entertainment product. She's an enterprise-grade product used for some of the biggest companies in the world, but for that one purpose, to convert, to move the leads down the funnel.
So you've put it, there's a personality around it that's like a digital personality, and they have a very specific role, which is someone puts their hands up in a marketing campaign, and then it's like, now what? They're qualified as a marketing lead, it sounds like what you're saying, and it needs to decide, is this going to be a sales lead? And there's usually some back and forth.
Right.
And you've created actually, like, is the avatar or the name, like the identity of that, you know, Conversa AI, is it different for every company?
And it is.
Okay.
It is.
And
it
how
is.
Do they decide on that persona? I'm kind of curious about
that. So marketers do that, right? So I'll give you an example. So we serve about, you know, 1,200 customers. And our customers include, for example, Embraer. Embraer is a private jet manufacturer. And so our assistant, I don't remember her name for Embraer, but she sells private jets to high net worth individuals and companies, right? I shouldn't say she sells. She doesn't sell anything. She converts.
She qualifies,
right? But she speaks formal Oxford English. She's very formal. There's no familiarity, you know. Her syntax is perfect. Her grammar is perfect. We also have, customers who sell used cars.
Interesting. Okay.
And those assistants speak very differently and behave very differently and much less formal. And they say things like, hey, and lose commas and sometimes improperly use contractions and things.
What? Wow. Are you kidding? Okay, so the are these personas that I would see on a website in chat, or is it just by email? Like, how does this manifest itself? Like, how would
That's a great question. So email is the primary channel.
Okay.
We very recently, maybe a couple of months ago, launched SMS.
Okay.
We are about to launch social and chat. So it's going to be,
goodness, this is amazing.
It's multi-dimensional thing.
And so then there's a visual component, not just a personality, a writing style.
Well, it depends how you look at it. So we have customers who have gone as far as creating a LinkedIn profile for her.
Damn,
right?
Okay.
Right. So,
to a new level here. Okay.
Well, and so for example, one job she does exceptionally well is schedule various types of demos appointments and invite people to events like trade shows or conferences.
Okay.
And people very often come and say, "So,
where is she?
Where is Rachel?" And we're like, "Rachel is not available." And you know what's really hilarious? I tell you what's really, really hilarious. What's really hilarious is then when you show somebody a demo, and then they go home, and then Rachel continues to email them about something, and they continue responding to Rachel incomplete, and you're reading these emails, and it's like, you just saw a demo.
So they understand that this is not a person, but they're talking to it like a person.
No, but they're kind of thinking that maybe like this one is not like her. Maybe like this one is real, and maybe like the assistant maybe sounds more artificial. She doesn't. She sounds completely natural.
So not to I think this applies, which is there's the concept of the singularity, right?
Yeah, right.
With Ray Kurzweil, which is, and
right.
You know, and almost, and I guess similarly the Turing test, right, where it's like,
right.
you know that. Basically, you know, the artificial intelligence is indistinguishable from the real one,
yeah.
Right? And that's, and then the singularity is at that point where the two kind of merge,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So, like what you're describing, when you are meeting with people, what is their reaction?
Well, and this is why I was very deliberate in highlighting that this is a sashimi knife. She's not going to chat. If you ask her, Rachel, you know, how do you feel about the upcoming Super Bowl? She will simply not engage.
Got it.
She's not going to chat about things that are outside of her area of focus. She just does this, right? And so, I don't, you know.
But that's by design, right?
But that's by design. Like, that is what she's meant to do. She's not passing a Turing test is a game. Like, people,
right,
you know,
of course.
You know, computer science departments and universities all over the world,
sure,
sit and try to, right?
It's like the Zoltar.
Right.
Big, right? It's like,
right.
Is it real? It's responding.
Right.
It's giving, yeah.
Right.
So, but I guess it's interesting because it's not that it couldn't do more, but you're very specific. So you're saying when people are interacting specifically with, let's call it Rachel, they don't have to suspend disbelief. They know it's a specific function. There's a limitation to it.
Yep.
So it's acceptable,
yeah,
by humans. And
yeah,
she probably solves a really difficult problem, which is normally really hard to recruit for, train, manage, and retain people, right? Retain, like, people in an SDR type role.
Yeah, and what we see is, so here's the thing. So now I'm gonna play you to your core, you know, competence. So we did a study with a you know, partner of ours that says that the response rate or engagement rate of a lead drops by some absolutely ridiculous multiplier if you go from 5 minutes to 1 hour. So if you do it, you know, if you respond to an inquiry in less than 5 minutes, right.
Got it. Okay.
Right. So what we know as marketers that our leads are never like this, right? They're like, they spike, right? You go to a trade show, you got 2,000 scans. You don't go to a trade show, you're flat. You're not going to hire additional people to respond to the increased demand. So that means you can never respond to leads as fast as you should, unless you're using AI, unless you're using something that's infinitely scalable. And of course, you know, the difference between her and marketing automation solutions is that she's personal. It is not HTML based, you know, broadcast.
You're trying
email.
To. You don't have to interpret the.
It's
clicks.
One on
it's
one.
Interesting.
It's like, hey,
you're
hey,
not. Yeah, there's a hey, there's a bit of a bridge between
hey,
looking
Victor,
at the tea yeah, leaves yeah. and actually right. getting a response to
there
it automatically.
There is no HTML, there are no links, there is
wow.
no forms,
okay.
there are no attachments. It's like, hey, you know, thank you for your interest. Do you want to set up a demo or talk to a rep? You know, it's very, very, yeah.
So what size of companies are able to use this at this point? Like, how accessible is it for different sizes of clients for you?
So the reality of life is that, you know, the larger the customer, the greater the ROI. Because if you think about, and this is the same with this as it is with the core value proposition of the cloud itself, right? I mean,
volume
cloud.
Network.
What cloud ultimately gives you is response curves to whatever's happening to your business. You don't need to go and try and sell off your overpurchased servers, right? You know, things are going well, you know.
You can scale
you spin
it
up more. If, no, you know, it slows down, you scale it down, right? And so it's this easy, flexible scaling that's the core value proposition here. So the bigger the company, the greater the benefit of scaling. And so our customers are like, you know, CenturyLink, which is maybe, you know, third, fourth largest
right.
telco in the country, you know, HP, Oracle is a customer, you know, so Chrysler is a customer, so big companies. Now, that said, you don't have to be a huge company. So the way we think about it, if you're getting more than about 500 leads a month, it's a pretty good fit.
And that's a big, that makes sense. And it doesn't really matter, it sounds like, whether it's B2B or B2C or... It's kind of like there's an inquiry. There needs to be a response and a time.
As long as it's a considered purchase, as long as it's not like an impulse purchase. But yeah, financial sector does really well. Consumer finance.
Wow.
All kinds.
Okay.
You know, cars, real estate. Yeah, anything.
And then, so you know, let's say it's all in the cloud, right? There's no on-premise portion of it. Does it need to talk to my marketing automation, or is there? There's probably a set number that you've already got integrations to, right? So if I have Marketo or a Pardot or something.
One of the coolest things about Rachel is how personal she can make it. And the way she makes it personal is knowing a little bit about you, very little. The core piece of information is really how we met, or so what was the format of that inquiry? Was it a trade show? Was it the form fill? Was it the... white paper download.
Lead source.
Source. Of, right. So she will pull in the lead source, right? She will pull in the name of your rep, right? She will say, hey, would you like to schedule a call with Michael? She's not going to say, would you like to schedule a call? She's not going to say, would you like... Very specific, right? And then, you know, of course, email and phone number and things of that sort, right? So she can operate through lead upload, but the best way is through integrations, and integrations with Salesforce, Marketo, Eloqua, HubSpot, Pardot, any sort of CRM or marketing automation.
Great. Okay. And then, so I've got that connectivity. I've got, let's call it my Marketo and my Salesforce. What's day one with Rachel? Like how do I... teacher what's important and what she's going to do. I think that's probably a component of it, I assume, but
oh yeah that's one of the my favorite questions, because it's something that's completely unique about the way Conversica has done it. So we aggregate data across all conversations that she's ever had. We don't capture customer information, we don't capture, you know, any of that, but what we capture is how people communicate. How do they say yes? How do they say no? How do they communicate their intent? You can say yes or no, but sometimes we don't do that. Sometimes we say, oh, Rachel, thank you so much for reaching out. I attended the wedding in Hawaii yesterday, and so wasn't able to respond to you. And next week I'm doing something else, and then, but you know, my assistant will reach out to you to schedule an appointment. I mean, it takes a lot to understand that that is a yes.
Right. So, it sounds to me like what you're describing is, I can throw a bunch of words, but it's parsing out what matters to her and her mission.
And that's exactly it, okay. Which is why going from 0 to 60 is very quick. She can be operational and up and running in a day because you do not need to train her. She has a data set of probably about 60 million conversations that she has had and that she knows how to. Now, there's plenty of things that you can customize. You can override the cadence. You can insert your own language. There's lots you can do. But if you want to just trust her and let her take you she can start being very productive very, very quickly.
Wow. So you're aggregating that experience across different organizations. And then are there like blocks of persona or how? You're saying just let it go, and Rachel's personality.
Yeah, I mean, when our deployment team, our customer success team starts talking to you, of course they will ask you, you know, do you have a particular message that's important for you to communicate? You know, what does your target audience look like? And there are some, you know, things you can tune but it's a pretty simple process. It's
that's incredible. You know,
and it's also kind of like playing chess, right? You can start moving and be very productive very quickly, but to master her, she improves all the time. So it takes a lifetime to master.
So one of the themes that I try to always address is, you know, with any new transformational thing, there's a lot of scared people.
Yeah.
And one of the fears, obviously, in our society of automation, robots, even 3D printing, some of these other technologies, is that it's going to change things so that individuals are displaced.
Yep.
And but I guess, you know, and I'd like your opinion on this. It sounds to me like maybe this replaces a role that maybe not a lot of people necessarily want and is difficult to fill. But there sounds like there's maybe another role, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, in working with Rachel, configuring Rachel, and making Rachel fit the job. So I'm kind of curious if what your experience has been so far with that.
There's absolutely no question. I mean, first of all, it's a brilliant question. So secondly, there's absolutely no question that Rachel is creating jobs.
Okay.
And let me tell you in how many ways. So first of all, companies, our customers, so we did the study with Salesforce.
Oh, okay. Makes sense.
Our customers add net Salesforce seats within 6 months of launching Conversic.
Interesting.
And so the reason for that is actually kind of, while counterintuitive, is fairly straightforward. You have a funnel and you have a marketing spend. And that marketing spend stays constant. So you're pouring leads into the funnel, and that number of leads is constant. Rachel now simply widens the funnel. So where before, whatever was coming out before, now 30% more qualified leads come out. And it's the qualified leads that take time. Because you need to do demos, you need to spin quotes,
okay.
you need to that. And so we think that perhaps the role goes from SDR to more experienced account executive and actually salesperson. We don't know, but there is such a suspicion. But the net number of salespeople goes up.
That's really interesting.
Because.
I mean, and, for obvious reasons, but what, couple actually. One is, you know, one of the themes that I try to talk to people about, we didn't talk about this before, is, you know, using technology and automation to free up stuff that's repetitive but important and letting humans do higher value premium work. And what you're describing
is exactly that.
totally is making it so I now need that higher end relationship manager. Right. And I think the second piece that's interesting to me is, and this is a conversation I've had with a few people over the last few days, is I did a book launch in San Francisco, and after that book launch, there was a pitch event. And, partially from the book launch and then also after, I talked to some young founders, and there's this fascination with marketing automation, and they seem really good at getting people to click and open emails, maybe abnormally so, with whatever tool they're using, right? But then, you know, the question
is... And now what happens?
Right. There's like almost not to send anybody out, but... there's almost like this consistent conversation where there's almost this angry request of, well, how do I get them to buy? And my response and my methodology is that, well, first of all, you need to understand the buying journey, right? So, and then how complex is the customer and how complex is the solution? And the point of that is to figure out, is this really just an e-commerce sale? Is it something where they're going to buy instantaneously and put it on a credit card and it's done? Sometimes yes, right? If it's a simple product and a simple customer buying process. But the more complex those other two things are, then you either need a hybrid. You probably need a hybrid, but you definitely need relationship managers. And what you're describing is this, and I said this, I think, to someone else, the death of sales sounds greatly exaggerated by what you're describing to me.
beyond that. Like, look, depends how you define sales, right? Mm-hmm. If relationship management is sales, relationship management is not going anywhere at all. If nothing but growth.
Interesting.
Right? Because you need more of that, and at the end of the day, and you know, now we can go into segue into completely left field, but you know, I like to you know, look, at the end of the day, over long periods of time, differentiating on features is very difficult. Everybody catches up with everybody else, and 80% of customers use 20% of features anyway.
Right.
And so at the end of the day, what differentiates you is you. It's your service, it's your approach to customer, it's your relationship, it's that, which is why people manage to NPS scores, which is why people really obsess over customers.
And just so people know, NPS score is the net provider. Is that what that?
Promoter score. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. So it's a way to judge how much your customers love you.
Got it. And you mentioned also, like, you have I think this concept of customer success is born a lot of out of the SaaS market, where software as a service companies are, utility based, so they have a vested interest in keeping someone on the platform and paying and growing.
Yes.
And so it sounds like you've employed that same methodology in Conversica.
Our largest department.
Is it really? Wow. Okay. And that goes to the idea of sale, like service is creating value. Not just a cost center, it's now an opportunity to
Absolutely, absolutely. The happier the customer is, the more likely they're to stay with your service, the more likely they're to recommend others, the more likely they're to act as advocates, the more likely they're to speak at conferences on your behalf, and it's a very virtuous thing.
Well, you're in a very interesting, exciting, at the epicenter, I think, of a very interesting, exciting, not only company, but maybe a trend. And I think, it seems obvious to me that this is here now and that it's an opportunity to be addressed, and it probably opens up a lot of pathways. So I'm pretty excited about what you're talking about. I want to be conscious of your time. So just a couple things that I always ask. One is, first of all, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you think would be important to address?
No, it's a great conversation, and I'm grateful for the opportunity to sort of talk about this because it is my favorite topic.
It's like very exciting.
The world is changing in front of our eyes, and we're making our small contribution into that change. It's fantastic.
So on that note, and I might already know the answer, I've been asking two questions to kind of wrap up some of these interviews. The first one is, how are you changing the world?
So I think I'm a very firm believer in what you said a few minutes ago, that automation goes after jobs that nobody wants first, right? And if you read anything about millennials, one of the things that people always say is that millennials are much more focused on jobs with meaning, jobs that have impacts, that they want satisfaction beyond money, that they're a lot less oriented towards things and much more oriented towards experience. They see fulfillment. They see it's hard.
It's very specific what they want, right?
Right. And it's hard to do, to get that in the jobs that are easily automatable, because what's automatable is by definition very, very routine.
Right.
Right. And so I think the timing at this wonderful point of intersection point where technology is at a point where it can automate and people are at the point where they don't want the jobs that are about to be automated.
Win-win.
Anyway, right? And yeah. You are right. Getting SDRs is difficult. Their longevity with the company is very short. The right. turnover is huge. So we're I think allowing these more fulfilling jobs to develop.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's not all, it doesn't even sound like far-fetched. Like, this is very real. This is happening. So also, I think that's
right,
what's exciting about
right,
it.
Right. I always, just a comment. I always get frustrated when I, like, you read a lot of articles about AI. I obviously read a lot of it because I have to. And it's always like, it has like always future tense. It's like always will eliminate job, will create jobs, will change the world, will.
But they don't understand what's going on.
It is right now. Yeah. You know, it's not doing, you know, what sci-fi authors of 1980s thought it was. It's not doing that yet, but it's doing enough. It's changing the world right now. It's already everywhere.
Well, I think that's why Peter Diamandis talks about these as I keep saying the word transformational, right. But what he talks about is exponential. So he's saying these are exponential technologies, and you're in one of them, which is AI.
Right.
And I think what does that mean is it's like it's not going to be it's being slowly adopted. People are going to jump on and understand an application like this, and it's going to rocket and take over things. But it's also going to create new opportunity, which is what you guys are doing, which is really, really exciting.
Right. And I always tell people, like, do not think about AI. Do not think, don't hire a chief AI officer. Like, don't do that. Think about your business needs and find vendors who are best at it. They will, you know, introduce AI into the equation. They will use AI to improve their products. Focus on your business need. If you have a leaky funnel, get Conversica. If you have, you know, other problems, get somebody else, right? But don't focus, how do I incorporate? You don't need to incorporate AI. Focus on your business need and find the best vendors who can help you solve those needs.
Amazing. And I think that goes to another trend, which is, you know, we talk about people are worried about their, you know, moving their cheese, so to speak, as an old term, but, you know, their job. And we're seeing this trend of not only freelancers, but I think a lot of those freelancers become enterprises, right? They become businesses.
Oh, yeah.
Doing what you're doing. So there's like the startup trend, but there's also this freelancer trend. And I see that's like putting power into small, you know, smaller organizations, small people's hands, but those things can grow. So I think this is really, you know, part of that trend. It's really exciting to hear. So I'll wrap up with one final thing, and this has been very exciting and very engaging for me, so I'm really happy that you responded to my outreach, and you were not nominated for this. I actually nominated you by reaching out, but what I've been asking my guests to do is I'd like you to nominate someone that you think on the, you know, the sort of topics that we talk about on Automate and Grow, and it's kind of broad, obviously, founder or expert in particular. I'd like you to nominate someone that you think that we should talk to and have on the show as well.
Well, I'm not going to take the easy way out and nominate somebody from inside Conversica.
Although I
think there's plenty of people within Conversica who'd be happy to do it. But there's definitely a lot of people who are great thought leaders on this topic. I think guys like David Cancel at Drift could be really interesting. I think a couple of execs at at HubSpot, like Chris, for example, could be super interesting on the. So there's definitely a lot of really kind of profound thought leaders in this area.
So who's someone that you know that we could get an introduction to, and that we could tell them they're nominated to be on the show?
Oh, you're gonna put me on the spotlight.
I think you're on the spot, like everybody else.
Yeah, I think David Cancel would be really interesting. Adrift would be a really interesting person. I'd be happy to make an introduction.
Thank you very much. Okay, so David, you've been nominated, right? And we will reach out to you through an introduction with Victor. Victor, thank you so much. This has been really interesting. I really appreciate you joining, and I want to continue to communicate with you offline, and maybe we can even have you back. As I mentioned, I'd almost like to see what you guys are doing, and maybe we can do it. You know, maybe some people might not be interested in this, but I would be interested in seeing how this works and how it's applied. So I'd almost like to have a product demo and let me
record it. And it's a beautiful demo. I'm happy to do it.
Great. Okay. Thank you very much. This has been episode 7 of Automate and Grow, and looking forward to many more in the next few weeks. Lucky 7. I'm going to stop.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Victor.
This has been an episode of the Automate and Grow podcast. Check out other episodes for interesting topics on how to grow, innovate, and automate your business. Subscribe or like us on iTunes, YouTube, Google Play, or on our website at www.automategrow.biz, and get your copy of the book Automate and Grow at Amazon today.